Truth News Radio Australia. It's Thursday, the 29th of April, 2010. I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. We have a bunch of stories here in the Twitter stream to get through tonight. We'll have Josh Jackson joining us shortly. And we'll have John Bursell, aircraft engineer and a regular contributor to Truth News, coming on in about half an hour. Well, main stories for tonight that I want to cover are developments in the Australian landscape, and they're stories that are pretty close to our hearts here at Truth News. One is in relation to climate change and the emissions trading scheme, which has been put on hold for at least 3 years, and that is really great news. It's actually caused a big stir, of course, in the news and in the political landscape, because the Rudd Labor government had certainly made a big deal of the carbon pollution reduction scheme, as they called it, and they've done a complete flip-flop. And I'll just read to you here the headline from today's Sydney Morning Herald. Rudd's ETS flip-flop sparks climate chaos. The Rudd government has conceded its emissions trading scheme could be delayed beyond the 2013 election, and that the politically inspired decision to leave the country in policy limbo for at least 3 years will make it much more expensive for Australia to meet greenhouse gas reduction targets. Electricity generators have warned untenable and uncertain climate policies from both main parties will have dire consequences for investment decisions and possibly even electricity supply. Well, you know, that's a bit of journalistic spin, I would say. Dire consequences indeed. I mean, the consequences are going to be that prices aren't going up, folks. The projected price rises were going to be quite extreme. And I do have here some information on that. The Cabinet Strategic Priorities and Budget Committee has removed the scheme from the four-year forward planning estimates, a decision that saves $2.5 billion because household and industry compensation would have exceeded the revenue generated by the scheme in its early years. Now, somewhere here we've got information. I'll try to dig it up later. But the price rises were going to be quite dramatic. And the change now, here we go. A poll by the Climate Institute think tank showed those trusting Mr. Rudd most on climate change fell up. Sorry, I'm reading percentage figures, 46% to 36%. There's actually a 46% rise in costs somewhere in one of these articles, which I can't quite put my finger on at the moment. Anyway, the projected rise, I think, was going to be 60%, and now in many cases it's going to be 30%. It's still going to be a price rise this year. It's just going to be less extreme than had been predicted with the ETS scheme. Okay, the next piece of good news is the Rudd retreat on web filter legislation. Now, I've got two different reports today on that, and one of them is quite clear in saying that the government has changed policy, whereas the other one is a little bit more uncertain. So I'll just read you the one that was published in The Australian today. Rudd retreats on web filter legislation. Kevin Rudd has put another election promise on the back burner with his controversial internet filtering legislation set to be shelved until after the next election. A spokeswoman for Communications Minister Stephen Conroy said yesterday the legislation would not be introduced next month or in the June sitting of Parliament, With Parliament not sitting again till the last week of August, the laws are unlikely to be passed before the election. Now, notice that was a spokeswoman for Communications Minister Stephen Conroy. Now, we'll just take you now to a story on ZDNet, which is titled PM and Conroy Clam Up on Filter Delays. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd today said he had no advice to suggest that the federal government's plans to implement a mandatory internet filter would be delayed until after the federal election, despite a report saying it would. At a press conference announcing the federal government's anti-smoking action this morning, ZDNet Australia asked the Prime Minister about a report that appeared in The Australian today, saying that the introduction of the legislation required for the filter would likely be delayed until after the federal election. The Prime Minister said he had no advice to that effect. He later said, when questioned if the legislation would be introduced this year, "Look, can I ask that you put that to the relevant minister? I don't have any other advice to what I put to you earlier." Well, this is an evolving story. It's really coming fresh off the presses today. I would suggest that they're backing out. The government, again, is backing out in a typically weaselly way, similar to the way they backed out of the emissions trading scheme. They've just gone quieter and quieter, and, you know, they won't officially acknowledge, but, a junior minister or a junior representative will leak something out, and then, you know, we'll hear a bit more, and then, you know, they're just sort of hoping that we just gradually forget, you know, and then they'll just walk away from it. But then they'll bring it back again, you know. There's strong evidence that the Liberals would bring it back in if they were elected. I've raised this in previous shows. The previous government was planning to bring in a system which was actually more draconian than the one Kevin Rudd wants to bring in. So we are going to be probably fighting this battle for years to come. But I think for now, the immediate threat has died away, and it kind of takes the wind out of the sails of any kind of protest movements that we were developing, because really there's not going to be anything happening for the rest of this year, and then we're not going to find out till after the election what the new policies are going to be. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. And welcoming to the show, Joshua Jackson, joining us from his cyber studio. Welcome to
my lair, my secret lair.
Indeed. We virtually come together on the show from all of our extended networks and bunkers, buried, yeah. You know, deep, protected.
Deep.
Yeah.
As deep Alex Jones would say, deep behind enemy lines.
Yeah, deep behind enemy lines, and we have to keep ourselves protected against all the radiation and.
Yeah. I've got my tinfoil hat on.
I've got mine firmly screwed down.
Look, there's just, I'm so ecstatic. I'm ecstatic because, look, folks, you have to take sometimes these moments in life where you have to enjoy bits of news. And the bits of news I'm talking about, Harrowood, take it away.
Yeah, there's been some good ones. So I've just been covering some of it. I've just been reading a few articles here. PM and Conroy clam up on filter delays. Rudd's ETS flip-flop sparks climate chaos. Rudd retreats on web filter legislation.
Brilliant.
Now, the latest on the web filter fiasco, as I think we should properly call it, considering that the US government has been, you know, spanking them on the bottom, you know, for what they're doing. You know, Hillary Clinton has spanked them. I think even recently George Bush said something about it. I read that on the internet. I didn't get a chance to actually follow it up. But, yeah, I mean, when you get the Americans spanking you, you know that you've done something naughty, right?
Yeah.
And now, as I suggested just before we went to break there, I think they're trying to back out of it in a typically kind of weaselly kind of way. So, first of all, we've had this leaked report from a fairly junior person saying that Spokeswoman for Communications Minister Stephen Conroy said that the legislation would not be introduced, and then the article goes on to basically predict that it won't come up this year because of various other considerations. Then ZDNet interviewed Kevin Rudd today, and Mr. Rudd says he has no advice to that effect. And you know, but this is this typical pattern we've seen from politicians, and I think we really have to be quite offended and disgusted by it when they use this kind of official denial, like as if they don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a prime minister. He's supposed to be the boss. He should know. And if one of his people has said that it's been cancelled, for him to say, I have no advice to that effect, is just pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, folks, it doesn't matter if it's up or down or left or right. Doesn't matter if Liberal's in or Labor's in. There's certain things, which is freedoms, that must always be battled. And this won't go away. Even if Liberal come in, they'd probably want an even more hardcore filter than Labor do. So,
well, they wanted to bring one in that would be managed by the Australian Federal Police last time, back in 2007. So imagine that. Imagine the Australian Federal Police monitoring and managing the blacklist.
Yeah. So it's a constant battle. So, you know, yeah, enjoy the victories. It's important too, because otherwise, you know, you never get any joy. But at the same time, be vigilant, because, you know, at the end of the day, you have to, you know, governments always grow. They always get bigger and bigger, and freedoms slowly do erode. So you have to always be vigilant.
You do, but I think we should quite rightly take credit. All of us in the grassroots movements for truth and justice should you know, celebrate. You know, because it was us. We made it happen. All of us.
Congratulations, folks.
Yeah, I mean, the ETS would have gone through had it not been for that huge groundswell, and it was like on radio shows like the Alan Jones Show, where thousands of callers were calling in, and then that gave...
Some of them even mentioned this show.
Some people mentioned this show, yeah. And then Alan Jones had the chutzpah to get Lord Monckton on.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Lord Monckton coming out here really tipped it over, I think.
I think that made such a difference. It was awesome. It was, and you know, you're seeing headlines now. I'm seeing them anyway. How it's so terrible that he's, you know, backing down. And I'm just sitting there just loving life. I'm just thinking, thank Christ.
Oh, yeah, of course, some of the environmental groups are screaming and crying and, you know, saying how terrible it is. And
some of them are saying ridiculous Orwellian language, like, we shouldn't it's a good thing that the ETS has gone, because we all along we should have a carbon tax instead of an ETS. And I'm thinking, that's exactly the same thing, you fool.
But you see, I want to now actually look at the other side, look at the still very predominant view about climate change. Because I had a little debate with a colleague on Facebook today, who shall remain nameless. But, you know, this is quite a common view that many people have who are quite reasonable and quite on side with us on many truth and justice issues. They say something like this. You know, there's evidence that smoking causes cancer. Now, I can't prove that my cigarette smoking is going to make me get cancer, but if it's a 50% probability that my smoking could cause cancer, I should quit smoking. And they use that as an analogy for why we should have had the ETS, and why we need to stop CO2 emissions. Can you address that argument for us, Josh? Because I know you're pretty on the ball with this. See if you can cut through that logic.
Okay. Look, the thing is, if someone was to say to me that you've got 50% chance of being hit by a car today, so you've got some chance of getting hit by a car, so you actually better not just leave your house. In fact, instead of leaving your house, you should pay car tax. You should pay heaps of car tax so that we can employ people to put up more signs and more stoplights and more rules around the cars, so they'll have less chance of getting hit by a car. the fact of the matter is that if you believe that carbon dioxide is creating anthropogenic climate change, is that, that humans are the cause of global warming, then why is the answer giving money to a centralized banking infrastructure to then gamble that money in the terms of credits, because it's not money anymore, it turns into what's called credits, and then gambling those credits to make more money on that? How does that help anything? Yeah, some people say, oh, well, what it'll do is it'll force the prices up of carbon. But really, it doesn't. What happens is that it'll drive it down for a minute or for a little while. But what do people do that own carbon credits, that buy carbon credits? Well, they want carbon credits to go up in price. They want, and the people that want to sell, so people that have bought them want it to go up because they want to sell at a higher price. You begin trading like any other commodity. And what do you want in your trades? That you want them to go up. So what will happen, they'll drop, and then there'll be this medium perfect price, and then you'll never get rid of carbon pollution because you would have created a market for it, and that market will then. So this whole notion that, oh, we should have the ETS just in case is ridiculous. If you are worried about global warming, we should be planting more trees and stuff like that, I guess. I'm not sure, but if you're truly environmentalist, the first thing that we should all be looking at is is the governments of the world and how much they pollute with things like depleted uranium in arms, and also plastics. The amount of plastics is so ridiculous now, and it is a true problem. Plastics are a major, major environmental catastrophe, especially when it comes to the oceans. And to this whole notion that, ooh, that's the major problem of the Earth, is this global warming, is a farce.
Well put. Now, there's been some statements from the energy sector which confirmed your worst fears about how prices would have gone up under a under an ETS. And I just can't find the article where I read it today, but it would have been like 60% increase.
Yeah.
In many cases. Look, folks, I mean, that would really seriously affect people's quality of life. A lot of people who are living, you know, pretty close to what they can afford.
Yeah, and people say, oh, well, I don't drive a car. Well, it's not that. It's your food gets delivered. So every bit of food would also go up 60%. Your water gets delivered. Your clothes that get delivered. Every single thing takes energy. And everything would be going up, not only 60%, it would go up more.
Yeah, well, I'm not suggesting like the cost of food and everything would go up 60%, but the cost of energy, the cost of electricity was definitely going to go up by that much. And of course, there would be increases everywhere else
But there's a flow-on effect. So when you have an electric generator that's creating the food.
Yeah.
At the factory that's making that's cutting the corn or whatever it is, that there's a whole process is involved through everything, and everything takes energy. So even the forklifts, the electronic forklifts that pick up the pallets, that put it on the truck, and then the truck would be paying carbon credits to the it's this massive flow-on effect. And it's not only your electricity that you get. It's not just the electricity bill that will go up. And maybe it wasn't 60%, and I'm probably inflating that, but it would definitely be a creeping.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right. I mean, we don't really know, do we? Like, the flow-on effects are hard to predict, and that there could have been like a racing kind of accelerating price rise that would be kind of involve like inflation as well. You know, it would be kind of hard to really know whether it was just inflation, whether it was due to the new energy costs, because the new energy costs, by putting the price of everything up, would create a type of inflationary economy. I don't know. It's a bit complex.
Well, look, folks, it's happening anyway. So yeah. My Bloomberg app on the iPhone, it just had an update, and I checked out what's new in the update, and it basically said that now you can check your carbon trading, your carbon credit trading investments. I mean, that's just so on my iPhone, I can quickly check my carbon trading investments.
How amazing.
And that's all it is, folks. It's another tool of trade. That's all. It's nothing more or less. And the inventors, which were the doomed Enron, folks at Enron invented the carbon trading scheme because that's what they did. Enron basically came up with trading schemes. They came up with the electric trading scheme. They came up with a whole heap of different ways, different things they could trade. I mean, anyone can trade anything. You know, that's the thing. You know, once you have a market for something, you can just start trade.
The word scheme and scam are very similar, apart from one vowel. No. Okay. Just before we get John Bursell on the show, I want to quickly cover the story from Poland about the black boxes and the crash of the Polish jet. Because, look, this is a story that I haven't really been highlighting on Truth News at all. There was a little bit of conspiratorial talk, and I couldn't see much in it. But there is one story here which I do believe is important, and I do believe that it's important that we do talk about it, because we are the only voice out here that will talk about things that get suppressed, okay? Now, the title of this article is Black Boxes Yield Data on Crash of Polish Jet. It's actually from about a week ago. It's actually from more like 2 weeks ago now, this story. But in this particular story, there are some quite disturbing statements made by Jolanta, and I don't quite know how to pronounce this, Jolanta Sizipinska, one of the party's senior members. That was the ruling party in Poland, who lost all their top leadership in a crash. Absolutely devastating. Now, Mrs. Sizipinska gave up her seat on the flight just hours before it took off. And she said she had been informed by Polish journalists at the crash site that Russian authorities demanded that witnesses who had been waiting to greet the dignitaries hand over their cameras and cell phones. I have flown many times on that plane and I knew the pilots, and I am convinced that it wasn't a pilot's mistake that led to this tragedy. Now, since then, the official news has been that it was pilot error. That's the only thing that they've come up with. Now, she said, it is disturbing the way the Russian side has been communicating and issuing statements and how they've had their version of events from the beginning. It is very strange and we expect answers. Now, there's also a bunch of stories floating around on the internet, including a video that was shot after the event, which appeared to show survivors and appears to have audio of gunshots. And there's also reports that the person who shot that video was later killed in an apparently unrelated stabbing. Now, I'm not saying these reports are confirmed, but the whole question of this Polish crash is really quite... It has very strange coincidences in it. And I just think that the way in which the media... When I see the media all adopting one view unanimously about something that you would immediately want to have, suspect foul play in something like this. And it's quite correct to suspect foul play in something like this. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of the options. So, but when the media immediately says, oh, it was just a crash, there's no, you know, it was just a pilot error, and they say that right from the beginning, well, that's called...
Plant. That's called a plant to
me. Yeah.
I mean,
it's just wrong. I mean, you know, we don't know. No, nobody can know until they do the full investigation.
Yeah. How can you just say that? How can any journalist just say, it was just a crash? Straight out.
Yeah, it's... And
why would you say that anyway? I mean, the first thing you do is you just talk about the people in the crash, and you try to you don't talk about the actual crash because you've got no knowledge. I mean, crashes take years to come up with the answers. You have to piece the whole plane together. You have to do all these computer models, and I mean, you can't just straight out say that sort of thing. And why would you? You know, so it's obviously a plant.
Yeah, it just really troubles me when I hear this on the media, and it sends chills down my spine because, you know, we've seen it in other cases, like when suspicious deaths occur, and the media just immediately spins it as something that everyone suspects it's something else, but the media just pretends that has no value at all. For example, you know, the death of that the weapons inspector David Kelly, who was found, you know, with his wrist slashed in the forest, just at a critical moment when he was leaking information to the media. And now years later, we found that there's this huge number of surgeons and doctors and highly qualified people who are absolutely adamant, based on their expert knowledge, that he could not have committed suicide. But the media at the time just said, oh, it was suicide, no question of it, no question of it, no doubt about it. You see, so, you know, you call me a conspiracy theorist, that's fine, but I have to be in order to even have a chance at getting towards the reality of things. You have to suspect that you're being spun a story. It's unfortunate. I wish we could trust the media. I wish we could just say, look, they're journalists, they're professionals, you know, they're going to give you all the sides of the story. That's what most people think. That's the way most people rationalize it to themselves. But they're fooling themselves by thinking that way in the light of all that they've seen, all that we've seen. Look at Building 7, you know. Anyone who looks at Building 7 with a minimal amount of information about the knowledge of building collapses can tell that must have been highly probable a controlled demolition. Yet the media said nothing about that. Nothing. No mention of it. So again, we have to be constantly scrutinizing and constantly skeptical of the media.
No, well then when highly qualified, top of their game physicists and engineers get together and find thousands of samples of explosive in the dust, the media still don't say anything.
No, they just ignore it, pretend, you know, and then suddenly they're forced to write on it because a famous person like Jan Utzon pops up. And they sort of go,
the son of the architect of the opera house.
Complete blackout on it. Then Jan Utzon pops his head up. You know, Josh and I shot the video. And then the Sydney Morning Herald steals the video. You know, we never even got credited for that. No. They just stole the video. And made it a story, but then they just sort of dashed cold water on it at the same time. Amazing. Anyway.
So, look, folks, we are the media, the corporate media, as I like to call them now. They're not the mainstream anymore. We are, the internet are. When I say we, I'm not saying this show. I'm saying the people, and we've got to stop referring to them as the mainstream, because they aren't. They're the corporate
shills.
Crap streamer.
Crap stream. Okay, we're getting John Bursell on. Just bear with us and we'll be right back. This is Jose Gonzalez with Slow Moves.
Revealing all the fractures, their moves and soon you'll know.
I'd like to welcome John Bursell, aircraft engineer, regular contributor to Truth News Radio, and one of the few people in our kind of truth and justice movement who I pretty much see eye to eye on most things. John has that kind of equivalent skeptical but open-minded view that Josh and I both have. And John, I asked you to come on tonight because we wanted to get into some of the murky waters again, the murky waters of chemtrails.
I'm gonna get a reputation. And, yeah. I'm gonna get a reputation for doing this sort of stuff.
I know we're going to get we're going to tread on people's toes again in this show, but at the same time, I know that the chemtrail show that we did last year is actually our top show in terms of traffic, in terms of comments and hits. So it's ironic because we weren't pro chemtrails in the show, but people just find the topic fascinating, and so I want to bring up chemtrails tonight, and also any other news that you want to discuss. I know you've been talking to various colleagues about trying to get the ABC, nail them down in terms of their processes. So John Bursell, aircraft engineer, 9/11 truth advocate, expert in various matters of airplanes and how they work, including how the engines work and how the actual fuel system works. Pretty important skill you've got there, John. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Harold, for the introduction. Yeah, just to clarify, I think I'm an avionic licensed aircraft maintenance engineer on Boeing aircraft, predominantly most of the big aircraft. And, it's funny, I was called today on 9/11 blogger, I was called a mechanic. Well, I'm not a mechanic. I certify for work mechanics too, but I can do the mechanical work as well. Most of my roles, troubleshooting aircraft systems and repairing them, with the aids of with mechanics and other trades. Basically you asked me if we could talk about chemtrails. So I know that we've been both been bombarded with emails about chemtrails, and also I think we've been, people have tried to marginalise us a little bit, some of us, for being sceptical of some of those subjects because they think that we're agents or we're stifling debate or whatever it is. No, we're just being critical. Harold, myself, and I think I can speak for Josh, we didn't get into 9/11 truth overnight. We didn't watch an Alex Jones film and go, right, those towers were brought down by controlled demolition. I spent a lot of time reading at the Journal of 9/11 Studies. I spent a lot of time thinking and rethinking things and looking for every possible way I could find a way to explain the collapse with what we'd been told. And I did that for a long, long time before I came to the decision that I'd put my credentials, my reputation and my livelihood at stake and start to question 9/11 openly. Now, I'm not going to do the same thing with chemtrails until I see some solid hard evidence. And I mean, there is a historical precedent with spraying at low altitudes. That's not high altitude condensation trail looking spray patterns. That's low altitude spraying with pesticides, with chemicals, with you know, mind-altering substances, all sorts of things that different governments in the world have done to their people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're fully aware of that. Geoengineering, I mean, sorry, weather manipulation, or whatever you want to call it, possibly that they do. They could be doing that. Yeah, I haven't seen any direct evidence of it in Australia, but it definitely could be happening. We know that they see clouds at lower altitudes for, you know, to create rain. And we also know that, you know, contrails are created depending on the conditions. And as we've been through many, many times, and in the past we've talked about these subjects different places, but I know we did that one show.
Yeah.
People have to realise that there's, now, there's three basic principles that come into play with contrails or condensation trails. One is the altitude, the other is the temperature, and the third one's the medium or the particles that allow this condensation to form. And it normally forms at a distance behind the aircraft engine. Now, there has been an increase in contrails in some areas of the world, and that can be purely due to changes in the weather patterns and the environment. I know that with the, say, the global warming argument that we've heard, you know, over the last 20 years or so, which is now sort of falling apart, you know, there was people that were arguing against the global warming argument, saying that clouds had more to do with temperature and, you know, and dimming of light and controlling of sort of atmospheric effects than, you know, than CO2 did. And that's
right.
True. I believe that's true from what I've seen. But we do see variations in clouds. Sometimes we have a really cloudy year on the planet and another year we don't. It all depends on how much moisture is in the air. And also the same with contrails. And, you know, now we've seen, you could probably list some of the arguments here, or would you probably got into more discussions about it than I have, because I tend to...
Well, I get a lot of it, yeah.
...dismissive of it, I suppose. I am a bit dismissive of the subject because I see it as a time waster at the moment, but I also value people doing research into these topics. So do you want to list through some of the things that you've heard and
sure.
What do you think, Harold? And maybe I'll come back with the technical side.
Sure. I get a lot of emails about it, and there have been a lot of comments posted on the... on the notes of the show that we did last year. Now, actually, we can get that up. I'll try to get that up in a minute. But now, one of the claims that people often make is that when the planes go over, when they see the trails, they immediately get a sore throat. Now, I mean, I'm serious. I've had people tell me this, and so they do believe that they've got other forms of evidence, you know, that they're bringing to the discussion. You know, it's like, yes, you know, I looked up, I saw the plane, then I got sick.
Well, it seems. You know, I've definitely come across firm cases of people suffering paranoia due to chemtrails and having reactions. You know, we all know that that if we've got to do some public speaking, sometimes we can get a very tight throat, you know, due to tension or worrying about speaking, say, for instance. I mean, people do react if they see something and they're nervous, they're anxious, they're uptight, then obviously they can get all sorts of symptoms. What do they call that? Psychosomatic, is that right? Is that the right term for that?
Yeah, psychosomatic is,
now, that,
you know,
it
could be.
Us. It happens to us as part of our normal life. Like, you know, I've had things like that happen to me because I've reacted to certain situations. And, you know, so, you know, people should consider that. It's funny, a good friend of mine in a 9/11 truther said to me once that he could see these things coming down in the sky. And he was talking about these thread-like things that he could see in the sky after he saw these chemtrails. Now, I couldn't figure, and I really trust this guy, and you know the guy quite well, and so do
right.
you, Josh. Anyway, and he's been on this show. Now, he was telling me about this, and I'm thinking, now, what could that be? Because I know he's not lying to me. He saw these things. And then I thought, well, a lot of people don't realize that inside their eyes, whenever you have a head injury or concussion to your eye, there's sort of like a fluid inside your eyeball, and you get these little fissures in the fluidy mass. And if you look into a blue sky, you'll see these little stringy things.
Oh yeah, I often see those
inside your eyes.
Yeah, when you look up straight into the sky, you see them. I know exactly what you mean.
That's right. Now
yeah.
I discovered these when I was in my early teens, and I went to the doctor and explained what they were. And, you know, because I couldn't figure out what they were, because they sort of move with your eye, but then they drift inside because it's fluid inside the eye. Now, I'd say what, and now I've thought about it, because I think about this for years, I thought that's probably what he's seen, and maybe he hasn't noticed them in his eyes before because he's looking up at the sky. Now, this is another example of maybe what's going on with people. They're looking for something, and they're looking up at the sky, and they've probably never really looked up at the sky anywhere near as much as they are now because they're looking for chemtrails. So we get this situation where people are looking for something, and they're going to see it because they're looking for it, and the more often they look in the sky, the more often they're going to see a contrail, you know. And now, anyone that sees a contrail in the sky and immediately declares it a chemtrail, this is going to sound a bit tough here, they're an idiot. Okay, that's going to piss a lot of people off. Because how do they know? How do they know what it is? And this is, you know, I did a show on the Visibility podcast that I've been getting a lot of heat off from some of these bloggers over at 911 Blogger, because I'm asking for people to be reasonable. And it seems to be very annoying for people to be reasonable. But that seems to be the only way that we're going to move forward. And now let's be reasonable about it. Sure, I'm not saying it's not a chemtrail. Right, I'm not saying you're an idiot for saying maybe it's a chemtrail, but if you're going to stand there in the street and say, look, we're being chemtrailed,
yeah,
and I've got a sore throat, you know.
Yeah, look, the other
I'm going to think you're paranoid and I'm going to think you're an idiot. Sorry, but that's just that's how I'm feeling. Now, I don't say that's necessarily true. You might be right, but that's how the average person is going to see you.
I mean, what I tend to say to people is chemtrail, like, if there is chemtrails, which there probably is, because there's probably aerial spraying of for using for military, you know, to get rid of heat seeking missiles or whatever, some sort of.
Well, the chaff. Well, let's just briefly break down the chaff because you brought that up. Now, I've got an email the other day. Oh, you know, they're firing this chaff, this aluminium, out the back of an aircraft. They've been doing it since radar was invented. They've been throwing out confetti, which is little particles, well, not really particles, little squares of aluminium. I mean, Kevin Bloody Rudd's plane has got it in the back of it, right? It's called chaff.
Right, right.
So what happens is if, you know, if someone's got a radar track on you, it's not for heat-seeking, I don't know if that helps, cloud heat-seeking, possibly could, but it's mostly for radar track missiles to give a similar size image, a radar image, than what the aircraft is. And you do that by letting go of these little sort of, it's confetti. It's like confetti, right? It's right at the back of the plane. Now, that's not going to do anything to anyone. Yeah, it's aluminium. It's not good. Don't eat it. But, you know, it's not, they're not chemically spraying us with chaff. And the chaff is something that's been used in the military for like 50
But a lot
years.
Of people saying that the military are testing out different types of chaff with all sorts of chemicals in it to.
Well, I suppose they could go to. We've seen this real increase of this nanotechnology. Yeah, I mean, that's possible, Josh. Yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, it'd be good to see some evidence. And same with the chemtrail thing that we hear. I got sent an email from that I saw went around the traps, and it came from a Japanese girl called Chihai that lives in Australia that I've been having some arguments with about chemtrails and other people. But anyway, I'll mention her name. She sends out emails quite regularly about things. And she sent one out about an aircraft mechanic with no name. It's just an anonymous email. And I believe this is something that people should not do. They should not pass on emails that they don't know where they're from, they don't know the technical detail, and because they influence people. You know, and we have to be careful with what we pass on. Anyway, she passed on this email that I got from another person, you know, saying, oh, what do you think of this? Talking about a mechanic in America that, first of all, he said that he worked on the toilet waste systems and only, you know, a few people at the airport only worked on those systems. Now, it is true in America that they do have they have more speciality jobs. And that's why sometimes I think they don't understand what I do in Australia with my job. In America, some people might only work on the hydraulic system of the aircraft, or they might only work on this part of the engine. Like, they're very specialised in what they do. They don't do, like, in Australia, we're much more, we cover a whole range of things. We're more broad, I suppose, in what we do. And we've got more of a sort of a structure than they do in a lot of their aviation. But anyway, to say that only a few people would ever go into the toilet waste tank area of an aircraft, and this is what this mechanic was saying, is ridiculous, because in the toilet waste tank area of all the aircraft I've ever worked on, and I'm talking about a lot of different types of aircraft, maybe up to 10, You've got flight controls running through those areas. You've got other sorts of actuators. You've got exhaust fans and different things and valves, all sorts of things in those areas and those compartments. So this email was saying that only these few mechanics would get into this area, and consequently they would be able to infiltrate these few mechanics and allow this new tank to be added into the aircraft so that they could spray us with these high altitude chemtrails. Okay, this was the idea. Then we saw a series of anti-static wicks, which are these little wicks at the end of the aircraft, because as an aircraft flies through the atmosphere at very high speeds, it generates a lot of static electricity, right? And we've got to dissipate that because it's very dangerous, because it causes all sorts of havoc within the aircraft. So we have static discharge wicks that wick away the just like a wick in a candle, wicks the wax up the wick and then burns it off. Same with these wicks, they get rid of the static electricity. Okay, now they're all over the aircraft, and there's some old ones and there's new ones. And the old ones have got a funny shape with they've got like a little ladder shape at the end, and the new ones are just straight black ones. Now someone was trying to say, well, these are normal static wicks and these are these chemtrail static wicks, and this is how they're spraying us. They've got this new tank they're putting in this toilet waste area, and then they're hooking it up to these special nozzles. Now, if you understand the construction of the aircraft, those nozzles, there's absolutely no way you could get pipes into there without completely reworking the wing. It's just ridiculous. It's just so ridiculous I can't explain how ridiculous it is.
Can I just interject for a minute?
But that's the sort of shit that we see coming in these emails. So if that's the standard of the chemtrail argument. I know some stuff's better than that. We've got some historical documents, et cetera. Maybe you want to talk about that. But that's the sort of thing that I see time and time again. Ballast tanks that are used for aircraft weight testing, to weight and balance, that people say are tanks. And all this, it's just all garbage. There is some good stuff there in the history, but, a lot of stuff I see is just people grasping at straws.
There's two theories that I've heard about the chemtrail planes. One is that they are special tanker planes, and people say they're unmarked planes that are totally separate from commercial airliners.
Okay.
Then there's another theory that they're actually commercial airliners and that they're putting it in the fuel,
And like we said, the injection systems and everything else.
Yeah, like you just said.
Aircraft tolerance of the engines are like... The tolerances are extremely narrow, on an aircraft engine, and the engines are monitored, to the nth degree. If we're not getting our pound of thrust, not pound of flesh, out of the fuel that we're putting into our aircraft, I'll tell you, we're whinging at Shell and Mobil on that because their fuel isn't up to scratch. The bottom line is all around fuel in our industry, and we want to get every cent we can out of our fuel, and we want to make sure our engines are running clean, lean, and, are doing the job very, very efficiently. To introduce any sort of thing into that, maybe there would be some chemicals that would be suited to the process of combustion, and that's possible. They could add, with petrol, say, for instance, they just put lead in it because it was good for combustion engines with the pistons and the valves. It formed a deadening layer and prevented wear. Maybe there's something like that you can do in jet engines, but we test the fuel regularly. Sure, we're not testing it for all those things, but to me it just seems like a really, really big stretch because you're dealing with all sorts of technical people that look at fuel all the time, and it's a massive conspiracy if they're doing
now,
that.
What would you, the thing that always that I always question with this, with the whole chemtrails thing, is why would you bother spraying way up into the upper stratospheres? I mean,
well, there is one reason.
Spray our food. Stick it in the drinking water. Which they already do, folks.
There is one reason, though.
All these people that are worried about chemtrails. Worry about the spray you're sticking on your food. The chemicals and the pesticides and the herbicides and the weedicides they're sticking all over our grapes and all over our apples.
Genetically modified food that they've genetically modified to allow to be sprayed.
There's a theory.
They're genetically modifying it so the pests don't eat it. They're genetically modifying it so they can use more Roundup on it, as we know.
Yeah, but there's a theory about why they're spraying it up there. So let's just consider it, okay?
Yeah,
it's a geoengineering.
The whole theory of that they are indiscriminately chemically poisoning us
There's a theory which is basically geoengineering. It's not so much that they're poisoning us, it's that they're doing it to increase, to deliberately create cloud. In other words,
weather modification.
Yeah, weather modification.
To reduce the temperature on the planet. But at least that is reasonable in its rationale.
Well, in that case, with that theory, there's a reason why they're doing it that altitude.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily about poisoning us. It may be a giant global experiment to see if they can change the amount of cloud cover. I mean, let's at least canvas that point of view.
Okay, well, let's think about that now. If they wanted
faithful.
To do that. They wanted to do that, Hera would, using a jet engine aircraft,
yeah.
and Josh, then they could simply, were taking samples and they knew what the atmospheric conditions were, they could send the jet airliners on clear days that would suit the forming of clouds, right?
Yeah.
They could send them to the right altitude to do it. It's above 26,000 feet or wherever contrails start up to 40,000. There's a certain zone there that it happens.
Yeah.
They could simply, the air traffic controllers could decide to send the airliners to the right area, right, to create that trail. That would sort of make sense if we were actually doing it together as a common purpose to say, right, we want to create as many of these little contrails that form into clouds in some cases in certain situations, and we're going to use that to reduce temperature as some new initiative. Yeah, you could do that, but they don't do that. You know how they decide what altitude aircraft fly at?
No. How do they do it?
Generally, they decide because there's jet streams and there's certain winds at certain different altitudes. And generally, the company requests to fly at a certain altitude because it's going to be cheaper. They're going to use less fuel. And
yeah.
Air traffic control agree to that depending on the traffic and other reasons, you know, depending on what sort of climb schedule they want them to do. But ultimately, the final altitude is designated by the aircraft company and the type of aircraft. You know, some aircraft that we've run it in my workplace fly very efficiently at up to 42,000 feet. Other aircraft, you know, they only fly efficiently
folks,
at 36,000 feet.
I mean, these are private organizations whose bottom line is basically
There's
what
no
they're
making
after.
Them on their behalf, but we're talking about the premise that they're trying to create clouds. Now, to create a cloud any other way without just doing it in the jet, what are they going to do? They're going to put more soot into the air because that's what creates the contrail. It's soot. It's small particles of soot that allow the moisture to condense onto the particle.
And I know that last time I was down at the snow, every, 15th ad on the radio was, this year, so-and-so company is sponsoring the cloud seeding to give you better snow cover. Like, that was a good thing. I mean, I was absolutely appalled at that. But, you know, it's like they actually advertise this stuff, and it's quite, pricey to do just in a little region.
When they're doing cloud seeding, you can see this is one of the things people people have probably turned off it, we're agents or whatever already. But the thing that people have to look at, when you look at a jet airliner at high altitude and you see a contrail, you'll see a distance behind the engine where this is forming. Now, it also can form at wingtips. Wingtip vortices can form contrails as well in certain conditions. So it's not always just from the jet engine, but predominantly it is. And it happens at quite a distance, maybe 50 yards or 100 yards or whatever it might be away from the engine. Now, if you're cloud seeding and you're doing it at a much lower altitude, because I don't have jet engine cloud seed planes, they're probably only small twins, they might better get up to 20,000 feet or so. Where the sort of low cloud is that they're going to get snow from, I'm not sure what sort of altitude that's at, but I'm sure it's not super high stuff. But I could be wrong. I'm not a meteorologist. Anyway, I'm just supposing this. But, if they're cloud seeding, they're going to be spraying stuff out of a pipe. Now, I've seen people claim that there's pipes on jet aircraft that are used for this, commercial aircraft, and in all the cases I've seen and the emails I've received and articles I've read, they've been the fuel jettison pipes. Now, the same with a fuel jettison pipe or with a cloud seeding pipe, when you're spraying something out, guess what? It's going to come straight out as liquid.
Right.
It's not going to be soot and then turn into liquid, or it's not going to be a gas and turn into liquid. It's going to be liquid immediately from the back of the pipe. So, we could see a clear difference between this sort of thing and what we see predominantly, as people saying, is chemtrails.
I just want to head back to the whole spraying of food, because honestly, folks, if you want to battle something, battle that. I mean, really, we have to help out our organic farmers because they're really doing it tough, man. And a lot of, it costs a lot to farm organically because a lot of your crop goes by the way of the pests. And they're doing it all to basically not spray, because there have been people that actually it was only about last week, some guy died of spraying weedicide in his garden, some old guy, and I think four or five other people got taken to hospital for poisoning because they went to help the guy.
There's so many campaigns that are tangible, that have clear evidence. You know, we've come across a lot of them in our struggle for truth off the back of learning about 9/11. I mean, you could list them. There might be 10 things that are the major things that are a really, really important thing to our well-being, our society.
And these campaigns that you're talking about tend to have quite a lot of professional people, scientists in their area of expertise. Even though they get dissed in the media, and even though they find it really hard to get their views taken seriously by the media, you will find that most of these groups do have really high quality people involved. Now, it is a bit different with the chemtrails, but look, can we just we've been presenting our skeptical view just to balance this out. I just want to play one of the rare media reports that covered this issue. It's from a couple of years ago, but it's on NBC television in the US. So just for our listeners out there.
Is this the one where they got the figures wrong by an order of 100?
Well, you can comment on that if you like. I'll play some of it.
There has been certain claims made, and some of the, just for the record, I think there's two or three mainstream news reports, and there are articles out there that you can find on the web where people have explained what has actually been found, and that's actually not been what has been claimed in some of these news pieces. So, but anyway, be skeptical.
No worries.
We know that the mainstream media don't always get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'll just kick this off.
More now on a Channel 4 News investigation, an exclusive we first told you about a few months ago concerning some strange clouds in the skies over Southern California. Some say they are simply jet contrails, but others claim it's the government creating chemical clouds to combat global warming. And tonight, one woman says the government's own data shows the chemicals are showing up in our drinking water.
We've taken a look for ourselves, but questions remain.
How does this make sense?
Strange clouds over California. Some people, like those we met in Crestline, call them chemtrails, an alleged government program to combat global warming by creating clouds with chemicals.
What I look up there and I think are contrails, you're telling me are chemtrails.
Yes.
The Air Force and NASA say we are simply seeing more jets and more contrails as a result, that there is no such thing as a chemtrail, and the actual contrails are a safe and natural phenomenon. But former FDA analyst Roslyn Peterson says the evidence on the ground only raises more questions about what's in the air.
What makes you convinced it's showing up in the drinking water?
Every time they put a chemical in the air, then we're starting to see it in unusual spiking in California's drinking water supplies.
Peterson says she searched through public documents like these from NASA and the Air Force and found a long history of testing in the atmosphere with chemicals like barium and aluminum, said by the agencies to be used at safe levels. And then there is Professor Gregory Benford of NASA and UC Irvine, who told us in our last story about ideas for modifying the weather that he says aren't happening now, but will probably happen down the road.
You could use barium oxide, for example, which makes big fluffy clouds. You could use tiny little bits of aluminum, which is benign in the environment, and essentially manage the climate.
We're dealing with aluminum here. Is this unhelpful and alarming in your opinion?
Oh, yes.
But for Peterson, the future is now. She says she combed over drinking water data from the last 10 years available from the State Department of Health. Her conclusion, those same chemicals, barium and aluminum and others, are showing up in water supplies across the state, spiking, sometimes above standards set by the Department of Health, and often around the same time as atmospheric test dates.
You're looking at barium spikes in LA County between 1986 and 1994.
This is an unhealthful level?
Yes.
In your opinion, an alarming level?
Yes.
And you believe this was caused by atmospheric testing?
Yeah.
Peterson has filed a complaint with the State Department of Health, which says it will have no comment until it has reviewed the case. But we did talk to Roy Wolf at the Metropolitan Water District in downtown Los Angeles, which supplies 50% of the drinking water in Southern California to 18 million people.
We wouldn't know if there was something that was being introduced from an airborne, other than the fact that if it was, it's not having an impact on our water supply.
Wolf says he can't speak for the Department of Health, but says that his district conducts thousands of tests every year and would eventually find barium and aluminum if they were spiking at high levels.
If there was a spike in between our sampling points, we may not see it on a monthly basis. Sooner or later, we would expect to see a spike if that were indeed occurring. We haven't really seen that. Even under the assumption that we wouldn't see it, treatment would remove it. So for us, it really is not a concern.
all of which is small comfort to Peterson, who says treatment can vary across the state. And if most testing is done on a monthly basis, she says there's no guarantee that anyone is catching the spikes in time to do anything, especially if no one is looking up.
By the time that they get a test that show that there's this unusual spiking, the water could be in your drinking water tap and go through. How can they protect us? Something airborne comes down. I don't understand how we're protected.
Now, the EPA tells us that high levels of aluminum and barium can affect the nervous system and cause high blood pressure. Again, we look forward to more analysis of that data from the Department of Health. And when we get it, we'll report back to you on their response.
Just going to take a quick break.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, well, welcome back to Truth News Radio. We're discussing chemtrails. So we've just had a bit of a listen there to an NBC story. It was actually the second part of a local television coverage of this story from California. I do believe the whole chemtrail scare started in California. I know the original guy who started talking about it was by the name of Carnicom, Clifford Carnicom. And Rosalind Peterson is another one of these outspoken people.
I do understand that in the States they fly like crazy. I mean, there are so many more planes in the States than there are here in Australia. And the pollution-wise, I can't imagine it being a little bit worse.
I think it can be quite upsetting for people, you know, when they look up and they see this crisscross, you know, cross-hatching of the sky. But, you know, some people in Australia are telling me the same thing. It depends on where you live. That's what makes me more convinced that it is the commercial planes rather than some special, you know, secret planes, because it's always on the commercial air routes. So
yeah, and it's the crisscrossing could be from a few different things, but basically we've talked about this before, that you know, like different aircraft, different companies fly company routes, and they fly the same route all the time, you know, and that's the way it is. They fly at slightly different altitudes depending on what's going on in the day, but predominantly they're around about the same place. Now, there are obviously different winds. Like now, if there's no wind at ground level, it doesn't mean that there's not a 150-kilometre-hour wind at 20,000 feet. Now, I know people might find that hard to believe, but that's the reality, is that different things are going on at different places at different times in the atmosphere. So, you know, we could have a slight, 5-kilometre-hour wind blowing at say, 30,000 feet where these contrails have been formed, and they can, you know, migrate across as then the next plane comes through and they migrate a bit further, and we end up with this crisscross pattern that develops through the day. Now, I just don't see anything unusual about that at all, because planes fly in these structured routes, and that's what you would expect to see. I've been looking up in the sky my whole, you know, working life, and I haven't seen a great change, but I know there has been some really unusual sort of things going on in different places in the world, but we're looking at traffic volumes in aviation, you know, more and more all the time, and, you know, we're having some variations in weather and humidity and all these other things, and, yeah, I just don't see anything particularly strange, you know, I really don't. And you see these photos, we get these photos where one plane's making a contrail and one's not, and people say, well, how's that possible? And I think I made this point in the last time we talked, that different engines have different ways of working. Some engines are high bypass engines, which means the fan at the front of the jet engine does most of the work, and there's only a small jet blast coming out of the engine itself, which is really just the exhaust gas from the work that's being done to turn that fan. But then on older aircraft, you have a low bypass where only the fan's doing, maybe 20 or 30% of the work, and most of the work's been done through the jet blast itself, through a traditional sort of jet engine, you know, concept.
And, plus, they could be at different altitudes.
Well, no. I've seen ones that are at the same altitude, different aircraft at the same altitude, and people have said, okay, well, how can one be making it and one not be making it? Well, because the pressure and the soot particles and all these other variables from the different engines are different, you know. So
there's very delicate threshold.
One might make it and one might not. And it also could simply be the fact that one's got more thrust on. There's all sorts of different things. And now we do see aircraft that are moving through the atmosphere, and then all of a sudden it appears as if the contrail turns on.
Now, but you know what
They get to an attitude where the moisture is and the pressure is correct for that to happen, and it can really just happen like a switch. Once the conditions are right, it happens. It's sort of not something that transitions. It just sort of happens at one time, and it doesn't happen at another. Now, that seems hard for people to understand, and sometimes I think it's off the back of 9/11. That we have some of these problems. You've got a lot of people out there that have found out about 9/11 and could deal with the reality of it, you know, now think that they're smarter than the rest of the world. In most cases, they are, because they figured it out. But then they think that they've now become a scientist or something, and they can make a decision, and they can look up in the air and say, that's the chemtrail. They're an idiot if they think they can do that. They can't do that. Right, that's ridiculous, and people have got to stop doing that. Now, what we just heard in that newscast...
Yeah, but at the same time...
That's reasonable, that's scientific, they're asking the questions, they've got some results that this lady's saying she has these results, we're asking for them to be verified. That sounds like a really good scientific basis for a discussion, but the one thing that worried me was she was looking up in the sky saying, they're chemtrails. How does she know that?
There were a few things that worried me about that news story, because she's talking about barium in the water supply. She's then pointing at chemtrails up in the sky, and she's not doing any kind of there's a gap of logic.
Mm.
Well, I don't know if it's logic. It's just there's a gap in terms of the mechanism by which she's saying that. I mean, if there's increased barium in the water supply, that could be getting there by any one of a million different reasons and a million
Absolutely.
Different ways. So what is the connection between what she's saying up in the sky and what's in the water supply? And she doesn't even try to make the connection.
That really bothers me. I'd just like to say, though, to say that people are idiots is a bit full on, because...
Josh, now just get this right? This is, you know, I've decided to get the shits about this issue because it's been pissing me off for a long time. If someone looks up in the sky and they see a condensation trail coming out of the back of a jet airliner that I've just serviced down there on the ground, right? I don't put anything in the fuel tanks. It doesn't have any spray system. And they say, that's a chemtrail. They're an idiot.
Yeah.
That's it, right? There's no argument about that. You can argue about it all you like.
It's official.
I'm just saying they're an idiot.
Okay,
but
what I'd just like to add to that is that at least people are questioning. You know, for me, I see so many people in life that don't care about anything. All they care about is what's on telly tonight or if they're going to have anchovies or not on their pizza.
Of course, care all they like, question all they like. Is that a chemtrail? Good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
Stating things as facts is what I'm talking about, mate.
Yeah, and that's
I don't know what's going on in this world. I've got no idea what's going on. And people that say they know, they got me worried.
I agree, John. I think it's very it's a very good stance. You know,
it sort of reminds me a lot of
the amount of work that the 9/11 Truth Movement has put into verifying facts,
credibility,
credibility is so enormous. And that's what I really love about the movement. It's not just pie in the sky, literally sort of saying, oh, yeah, that's that. It really is, you know, very professional, very dedicated, thousands of people really working hard at peer reviewing and all sorts of things and using the scientific method. Whereas
Cassidy, all those things that, you know, Harold Wood was talking.
But you know what, John? It takes someone just to question and say, is that a chemtrail? And become passionate about it and to say, look, I believe, you know, like any scientist, if you believe something, you have to then go out and get scientific proof to justify your beliefs.
But normally what happens in these cases, we'd say with 9/11, is that, you know, you have people that have questions about things, they see things that happen, and, you know, and then when the scientists get on board and start to produce the papers, then they become more vocal about, you know, their opinions, because they've got support from this peer-reviewed, you know, scientific system that we've developed as a scientific community, you know, this peer review and publishing, and, you know, you put something out there, then someone rebuts it, and, you know, we end up with this discussion, and that's great, and that's how we move forward. And then you get some sort of movement behind those scientists. But the chemtrail thing's like been really, really a strange thing. It's really, I suppose, it's an internet phenomenon. It's a good example of what's sort of wrong. In some ways, we've got so many people disillusioned with the world now, you know, and I fully understand that. And paranoid, like, man, I'm paranoid.
To be honest with you, it reminds me...
There's bad things going on, you know. There's nothing wrong with being a bit paranoid. But to start deciding that you're a scientist and you know what's happening at 40,000 feet in an aircraft, you know, that's just, like, a little bit extreme.
To be honest with you, it reminds me of a lot of the UFO sort of stories that come out, because it's like... Like, you're talking about people not being, you know, thinking clearly, or not being kind of rigorous enough about the information that they've got. And they just look up, they see something and they say, well, that's a chemtrail. It's a bit like with the UFOs, because, like, quite often people capture something on their camera and then immediately we hear a story that there was a UFO reported. And in so many cases, things that can be captured on cameras, especially through, you know, like windscreens of cars and stuff, can have all these kind of little artifacts of stuff that gets in on the film or whatever. But you just hear something being reported as a UFO. And then it's all, like, all critical thinking goes out the door, because then people sort of want to believe in the UFO phenomenon, and they'll actually, you know, they'll be quite offended at skepticism, and then they'll say something like, well, don't you believe that life could exist in the universe? You know, how can you deny that life could exist in the universe? Well, la di da. And it goes into this kind of...
The universe is infinite and we exist, then it's very likely there'll be some other life.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they could travel a minimum of 4,000 light years to get here. But anyway...
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they couldn't. I mean, they could very much...
The other, you know?
Yeah, but they—I mean—they definitely could be alien visitors. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm fully open to any of that stuff, and I've looked at some stuff that's pretty strange, and that made me wonder. And I know there's been a lot of people that have had some very strange experiences, and that's you know. So I've got, and just like with the chemtrail thing, like if people you know want to consider and think about and investigate chemtrails, that's great. But just please just don't send me any emails that are just junk. You know, I want to see the peer-reviewed. Get me the peer-reviewed stuff. Get me the chain of custody. I want to see people doing some serious research. Get some of their hard cash. Get some of their cash out, like some of us have done with 9/11, and put some things on. Get some teams working on a few things. You know, and let's move somewhere with this shit and stop
Chase,
talking about
it. Hire a little biprop. No, you probably couldn't
get to
the same.
You can't get high enough to capture it, and I suppose that's part of the problem is because we can't, and it's very hard to debunk as well because we can't, you know, go up there. But there's on the Australian Orbat, if you go to the Australian Air Force Orbat, right? Now, maybe we've got some secret hangar somewhere, I don't know, but we don't have planes that can spray stuff out at those altitudes. Planes are designed to spray at low altitude, you know. So I don't even know if a plane exists that can do the sort of things that we're talking about. I'm sure the Americans have got stuff that can affect the weather, you know, if they choose to reduce the temperature. I'm sure they're working on those ideas. And that stuff, you know, like when I see sites with weather modification as one of the subjects they're looking into, I think that's credible, and I think that's interesting. And
well, I mean, wars, whole battles have been lost because of weather.
Poison.
Yeah.
They're spraying us with poison. Well, they put fluoride in the body water for the dumb people, don't they? You know, that's what they do, and the rich people drink bottled water. You know, but it's much more difficult to get out there and spray something into the atmosphere at 40,000 feet. Who knows where it's going to end up, man? It could end up on another continent.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I always say. Where does this? If you spray that high, doesn't the winds just keep it up there? I mean,
well, who knows? Sometimes there's 200 km/h winds up there. You know,
hailstones the size of golf balls fly upwards in those altitudes. They go up and down, and they keep going up and down until they grow bigger and bigger, and they finally get too heavy and they fall down.
If they're letting stuff out of those sort of altitudes, they're prepared to put that into everyone's ecosystem, because that's the reality. You know, if you're that high, that stuff's going to, whatever's coming out of there, if there is something coming out of there, which I don't think there is, it's going to go everywhere. So all the rich, all the, you know, the 300 richest families in the world and the Bilderbergs, all those people are all going to get affected by it. And they all
and the other thing is, it seems like a very, you know, if it was happening, it seems like a ridiculously over-exhaustive method of doing it. I mean, first of all, the secrecy would have to be absolutely massive to have thousands of planes all spraying this stuff. But B, it seems like such a waste. You know, just put it in everyone's water, or put it in food, or put it in, I mean, water. If you, even if you put stuff in water, you eventually get it in all the food. I mean, all of our bread has got.
If people are worried that it's going into the fuel that's coming out of Sydney Airport, please make contact with me, johnbursaw@gmail.com, and I will get you a sample of fuel, okay? And you can have it tested.
Thanks for that, John.
If you're worried it's in the fuel, I'll just get a random sample of fuel, and I'll bring it out a little container for them, and they can have it tested and see what's in there.
That is a great offer. I hope this show has helped the debate to some extent.
And if you guys have questions out there, folks, remember, get it in there. It's so important. If you are totally offended by what we're saying here, or have evidence to the contrary,
and if you've done some research,
just send it. You know, send it in truthnews.com.au and leave a comment on the show.
Yeah, any info you've got, or if you're a meteorologist and you think chemtrails are real, you know, let's say you.
Well, that would be good. Let's have a show with, you know, I've been to conferences where they've been talking about some of this stuff, and yeah, it's like, I'm really concerned about it, but I want to see it go somewhere, you know, if these people are really serious. I don't want people just telling me that contrails are chemtrails, and that's their activism, is to go, oh, look, chemtrails, because that just, you know, that's pointless. If something's going on, let's get to the bottom of it, let's get something happening. But, you know, otherwise, just stop sending me those emails.
Totally.
Stop sending them to Harrowood too.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not. Don't say stop sending them. Keep sending me emails. I can handle it. Don't worry.
You can handle it.
Yeah, I'm big enough. You know. But look.
Do we want to move on now? If we haven't that subject enough.
Well, look, we've kind of run out of time for tonight's show. I'd love to get into more stuff, but we'll get you on again soon, and we'll talk about
some stuff going on with 9/11. So we had a meeting the other day, which was quite interesting, and some new initiatives, new events coming up. Also, we want people to encourage people to make formal complaints with the ABC about their coverage of 9/11, and we can go into that maybe in a later show too.
We're going to hammer that. We're going to get right back
into
that.
Do something real, make a real change. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's right. Now that we've won the battle about the ETS, and we also won the battle on the internet web filter for the time being, we've got more time now to get back to 9/11.
You've won this time, Gadget.
Yeah, so...
And you know what I've been told recently? You know what they really hate? The rich and powerful and the military-industrial complex, they hate it saying 9/11 truth brings peace. It'll end the world war in Afghanistan. 9/11 truth will end the war in Afghanistan, and that's something that we've got to remember. We are the peace movement.
Absolutely, yeah.
Word up.
And on that note, we're going to say goodnight for tonight.
Good night, folks.
Good night, Australia. Good night, world. Good night, cyber reality.
See you later, John.
Cheers.
Thanks.